Coming up this week, Ford starts construction of their Blue Oval City. Tesla launches its CCS adapter for North America. Sandoz starts deliveries of the Metacycle, and more. Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 122 of the EV Resource Podcast. I'm Zach Hurst, and each week I bring you the latest EV news, information, and interviews with industry experts. Before we get started with the news this week, I want to thank our podcast partner, Titan Auto and Tire, for their support. Titan has Central Virginia's premier EV and hybrid service locations and provide trustworthy expert service for your electrified vehicles. From hybrids to Hummers, they fix everything. For more information and to schedule an appointment for your vehicle, go to TitanAutoTire.com. That's TitanAutoTire.com. We're starting off strong this week with a story out of Western Tennessee. Ford has officially broken ground at their Blue Oval City, the largest and most advanced production complex ever in the company's 119-year history. Less than a year ago, Ford and SK Innovation announced a $5.6 billion investment to build a revolutionary all-new electric truck and advanced batteries for the future Ford and Lincoln vehicles. When finished, this nearly 6-square-mile campus will create approximately 6,000 new jobs, and production of the new vehicles is said to begin in 2025. Eric Grubb, Ford's director of New Footprint Construction, said, quote, "We are building the future right here in West Tennessee. This facility is the blueprint for Ford's future manufacturing facilities and will enable Ford to help lead America's shift to electric vehicles," end quote. With construction now underway at Blue Oval City, Ford, America's number two electric vehicle brand, gets closer to its target of a 2 million EV production run rate globally by late 2026. I can't wait to see what Ford is able to do once this facility is up and running. Next, a long time happening, or might happen, or maybe not, EV truck has finally entered into production. Kind of. Lordstown Motors, the company focused on building light-duty electric pickup trucks for commercial fleets, has officially started production of the Endurance truck. So, great news for the company, right? Well, the company has so far built two trucks for customers at its Ohio factory. It expects to complete a third truck shortly, and they're aiming to deliver about 50 trucks to customers by the end of the year. So don't count on them competing with the Ford F-150 Lightning for commercial fleets anytime soon. Still, it's great to see that progress, however slow, is being made. It would seem that Lordstown is in fact enduring. Hertz is back in the news again. They have been visibly moving towards electrifying their fleet at a pace that would make even the Flash gaze and wonder. Now, Hertz and BP announced the signing of a memorandum of understanding for the development of a national network of EV charging stations provided by BP Pulse, BP's global electrification and charging solution brand. The MOU sets the foundation for Hertz and BP to drive the future of mobility and accelerate EV consumer adoption. The agreement also involves the management of Hertz's charging infrastructure by BP Pulse and the customization of its Omega software to ensure Hertz's growing fleet of electric rental cars are recharged quickly and efficiently between rentals. Omega supports fleet operations by automating charging when the power price is low while providing real-time visibility to EVs, chargers, power usage, and more. Hertz has a national footprint of locations all across North America suitable for BP Pulse to build and manage a network of fast charging hubs to serve Hertz customers, including taxi and ride-sharing drivers, as well as the general public. Stephen Scher, Hertz CEO, said, quote, "Hertz is accelerating the adoption of electrification by investing in the largest rental fleet of electric vehicles in North America and expanding the availability of charging stations. We are excited to partner with BP Pulse to create a national charging infrastructure for the Hertz EV fleet, thereby growing the number of charging options available to our customers and providing them with premium electric experience and lower emission travel options," end quote. Through large-scale purchases from Tesla, Polestar, and now recently announced GM, Hertz has assembled a fleet of tens of thousands of EVs, which are available at 500 Hertz locations across 38 states. Hertz's objective is for one quarter of its fleet to be electric by the end of 2024, with continued growth through acquisitions from various EV manufacturers. Hertz has invested in thousands of charging stations across its locations, and this partnership with BP Pulse will enable Hertz to sustainably expand its national charging footprint. Next, we all know Toyota has been exploring many electrification efforts aside from full battery electric vehicles and has never given up on hydrogen as being a path forward. For passenger vehicles, I have never felt like hydrogen was the best answer, but for larger vehicles like airplanes, ships, trains, and trucks, the use of hydrogen actually makes a lot of sense. These vehicles typically see a preset route from fixed point A to fixed point B where they will sit, often for an extended period of time, before heading back to point A. The routes are known, and data is plentiful on how the logistics should be run. And that's why I'm excited about this next story. Toyota and Kenworth Truck Company have announced they have proven the capabilities of their jointly designed heavy-duty Class 8 fuel cell electric vehicles as a potential zero-emission replacement of diesel-powered trucks. They have shown this with the completion of their operations in the zero and near zero emissions freight facilities project at the Port of Los Angeles, the Los Angeles Basin, and the Inland Empire. The primary goal for Toyota and Kenworth's participation in the project was to nearly match the performance of diesel-powered trucks while eliminating emissions to provide a sustainable solution in heavy-duty transportation. The baseline for the Toyota Kenworth T680 fuel cell truck, codenamed Ocean, was a 2017 diesel engine operating about 200 miles a day. The T680 fuel cell has a range of 300 plus miles when fully loaded to 82,000 pounds, and with no downtime between shifts for charging and the short 15 to 20 minute fill time, the fuel cell electric vehicles could run multiple shifts a day and cover up to 400 to 500 miles. Kenworth designed and built the Class 8 T60 fuel cell EVs, while Toyota designed and built the powertrain's fuel cell electric power system powered by hydrogen. The Ocean trucks reduced greenhouse gases by 74.66 metric tons of CO2 per truck annually compared with the baseline diesel engine. The success of the 10 trucks in serving real-world customers was a result of close collaboration among diverse project members, including Kenworth and Toyota, the Port of Los Angeles as the project lead, Shell for hydrogen fuel infrastructure, and a grant from the California Air Resources Board. The program paves the way for further development and commercial opportunities for hydrogen-powered fuel cell electric transportation in California and hopefully beyond. Next, Tesla is recalling more than 1 million vehicles over window pinching concerns. That's right, if you stick your finger in the window, it might not actually stop the way a lot of the automatic windows have, like a detecting feature. Well, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, NHTSA, has cited a violation of federal safety standards for power windows, while Tesla has responded saying an online software update, an over-the-air update, will fix the problem. The recall covers certain 2017 to 2022 Model 3 sedans and some 2020 and 2021 Model Y SUVs. Also included are some Model S sedans and Model X SUVs from 2021 and 2022. Tesla discovered the problem during production testing in August and are not aware of any warranty claims or injuries due to the problem as of September 16th, according to the documents. Owners that have affected vehicles will be notified by letter starting November 15th. The company says in documents that vehicles in production got the update starting September 13th. So, that is to say, this is yet another quote-unquote recall that is simply fixed with an over-the-air update, and by the time owners are going to be notified, the problem will have been solved 2 months beforehand. Yet, of course, a story like this makes the news and gets spread far and wide as just another thing that's wrong with Teslas. Well, to be completely honest, I think that's bull. There is a good reason that Tesla is also in the news this week, because they have now officially launched their CCS adapter for only $250, enabling Tesla drivers to access public charging stations that are not the supercharger network. This is a product that Tesla owners have been waiting for a long time. For the past year, Tesla has indicated that it is going to open its supercharger network to non-Tesla electric vehicles, And that has been a concern for Tesla owners since it will increase traffic at supercharger stations. And on top of that, it doesn't work both ways since Tesla owners have not had access to most non-Tesla charging stations due to them being equipped with CCS connectors and not the CHAdeMO connector, which, of course, we know is a standard that is fading away in North America very quickly. So having an adapter that will allow Tesla vehicles to use other options will help alleviate some of the congestion on the supercharger network, certainly now with only Tesla vehicles. But if Tesla plans on opening the supercharger network up to other cars and trucks and SUVs, then the congestion, especially during holiday times, I can only imagine the lines. So this is great that if a Tesla owner rolls up to a supercharger and it's full and there's going to be a wait, they can, if they have this adapter, they can simply just drive to the next available third-party charging station and use that. In 2020, Tesla announced that a CCS1 adapter was coming, but it was only available in Korea for some reason. Now, 2 years later, we have this option for North America as well. And good news, it's not something that's going to be slow. The adapter can sustain charging speeds of up to 250 kilowatts and can be used at this time, we believe, all third-party networks. So that means your EVgo, your Electrify America, and many other networks that have the CCS adapters. But there's a catch. It won't work with every Tesla vehicle. Teslas built prior to October 2020 will likely need a new charging ECU, and that's a retrofit that Tesla says will not be available until early 2023. So if you're interested, you can head over to Tesla's online shop and find that adapter. It's only $250, which honestly is not a bad price for something like this. I'm probably not going to do it because we rarely go on longer trips, and when we do, the supercharger networks are just easy because the Tesla navigates to your destination and it will automatically include the charging stops as needed. You don't have to figure out where they are. You don't have to figure out how much time you're going to be there. And the car will start optimizing the battery temperature, preconditioning on your way to the charger. So when you plug in at a Tesla supercharger, the battery's already warm and you can maximize the speed of electrons flowing into the battery. I don't know if that same feature is going to be available if you're navigating to, let's say, a site that is operated by Electrify America. So it remains to be seen. Honestly, I'm sure we'll see some YouTube videos of people that have this adapter that are going to use it. But it's a great secondary option, but certainly not going to be the preferred method of quickly recharging your Tesla. Sandoz has finally started deliveries of its Metacycle. The electric motorcycle has been plagued with production delays, changes to the design, and even a price increase of $1,500 since it was first revealed in early 2021. This is one bike that has been on my want list, and honestly, if my wife liked the way it looked, we'd probably have one. It seems, however, to be designed for a very niche market. The design is very futuristic, angular, where the gas tank and engine would be in a traditional motorcycle. It's empty space. The frame kind of goes around it the way a bicycle does. So it looks really, I think, cool. But it only has a 4 kilowatt hour battery, and that means it has an 80 mile range. So if you were in a cold climate and wanted to drive this in the wintertime, you're probably looking at closer to 45 miles of range or so, which is perfectly fine for what they're designing it to be, and that's more of a commuter bike or an urban lower speed vehicle. The really cool thing about having a small battery is that that means it can recharge on 110 volt, just a regular wall outlet, in less than 4 hours. And their battery is only 7 pounds and removable. So in theory, you could ride to work, take the battery off the bike, bring it up to your desk, charge it next to you during the workday, and then at the end of work, have a full charge for your drive home. That's pretty cool. So they are starting deliveries. That is something that I have been waiting on for quite a while. Excited to see, and I would love to see one of these in person. They're now $6,500. when these were launched, it was $5,000, but the company did say that they were going to increase the price. So that isn't a surprise. And to be completely honest, $6,500 for this bike, that is a great deal. Uber is committing to an all-EV fleet by 2030. The company plans on committing $800 million in funding to help drivers make the transition to electrification. The funding, along with the expansion of Uber Green and Comfort Electric Services, is part of Uber's goal to completely transition away from the internal combustion engine. According to Uber's CEO, drivers who have not made the switch to an EV by 2030 will not be allowed to drive for the company. Drivers who do make the switch and participate in the Comfort Electric service will earn an additional $1 per ride, a perk that cuts off at $4,000 annually. Which, honestly, that's 4,000 rides. That would have to be somebody that is not only doing Uber full-time, but doing it, like, overtime. That, and that $1 per ride, I, like, with my Spark EV, I'll drive Uber Eats food delivery, and I'm getting a dollar extra per delivery because it's an electric vehicle. So that's something that they're already starting. Like, it's already there. So I think that's pretty cool that Uber is very forward thinking. They are fully supporting the transition to electric vehicles and in their own way promoting that for the vehicles that get used the most. Commercial use for vehicles, whether it's delivery or ride sharing or whatever else, those vehicles are going to be on the road probably driving around more than 50% of their life, where any other car, it sits for 90% of the time in a parking lot or in a driveway. It's not being used. So for them to make this push is going to affect things so much more than just somebody that doesn't work for Uber having an EV. Okay, the penultimate news story I have for you this week is about Renault and their R5 Turbo 3e electric concept. And that's quite the name, but it is for quite the car. This concept is a car designed for drifting, and it will pay tribute to the model's previous versions, the Turbo and the Turbo 2. This all-electric show car's contribution to the Renault 5's 50th anniversary celebrations is an up-to-the-minute take and tribute to the most celebrated sports versions, the Renault 5 Turbo and Turbo 2. It has logically been named the R5 Turbo 3e, 3 because, of course, it follows Turbo 2 and E for electric. R5 Turbo 3e is another example, alongside Renault 5 prototypes, of the electric rebirth of a flagship model for the brand. Renault is electrifying its history to better prepare its all-electric future in Europe in 2030. Did you catch that? I think that's very smart of them, for them to go after the legacy models, the ones that have a lot of feeling for their customers. And this reinterpretation of the Renault 5 Turbo 2 is very deliberately exuberant, and its performance is at top of the class. So they're doing a good job and really pushing the best of the best towards electrification. And lastly, round 4 of the Extreme E season saw chaotic action all weekend, showing that the series more than lives up to its name. Extreme may be, in this case, an understatement. X44 Vita Carbon Racing, the Extreme E team owned by Formula One star Lewis Hamilton, scored their very first Extreme E victory of 2022 in a wild Copper X Prix final in Chile. The four-lap contest on the 1.9-mile course in the Antofagasta Desert ended with confusion over the winner, with on-the-road victors McLaren Racing subject to penalties for clipping track markers. There was the potential for a similar punishment for X44 as well, but with that flag not falling entirely, stewards decided not to take action. X44 was the early leader in the race when Sebastian Loeb gapped the all-male starting field early on, but McLaren's Tanner Faust soon fought back, closed the gap, sweeping by Loeb by the end of the second lap, just before the driver switch zone. After Christina Gutierrez took over the X44 car from Loeb, she immediately used her hyperdrive power boost to retake the lead from McLaren's Emma Gilmore. Like her teammate, though, Gilmore mounted a fight back and returned to first at the same spot as Faust on the final lap. But with Faust clipping a flag on his run and Gilmore doing the same, McLaren was eventually classified fifth after 20 seconds of penalties. That decision by the stewards promoted Acciona Sainz's Carlos Sainz and Leia Sands to second, and Chip Ganassi Racing's Kyle LeDuc and Sarah Price to third initially for clipping a track marker, and then later to fourth for missing waypoint 11 on lap 3. So App Cupra snatched the final podium spot. Regardless of the post-race rulings, Chip Ganassi's result was perhaps the most remarkable of all, considering that the team shouldn't have even been racing in the final. After finishing their semifinal in third, LeDuc and Price were set to watch the main event from the sidelines. But a software glitch for championship leaders Rosberg X Racing, which won their first semifinal race, meant that they couldn't get to the grid. They couldn't actually race. And just to catch you guys up on some of the championships drama that was in this weekend, had Rosberg X Racing made the final, they likely would have either outright won the championship if they had won the race, or extended their championship lead to make it nearly impossible for anybody else to catch up next time. So the fact that all of the other teams really needed Rosberg X Racing to like not get any points, it was almost like it was sabotage. And I'm not suggesting that, of course, but their car wouldn't even start. They couldn't drive it. So you ended up having 4 out of the 5 cars that were in the final already there. And that meant that Ganassi Racing was promoted to the final. And in the final, the Ganassi duo stayed out of trouble to maximize their opportunities because, of course, they were second in points. And meanwhile, Acciona Sainz and Apt Cupra, with Nasa Al-Attiyah and Clara Anderson driving, engaged in a tense race-long battle which ended with Acciona Sainz prevailing, albeit with Sands crossing the line with a severe right rear tire puncture. I mean, she came in and it looked like the tire was obliterated. It was like it wasn't even there. I encourage you to go check out the Extreme E YouTube channel where you can see the action that I'm talking about, because Extreme E is, well, extreme. It's amazing. Apt Cupra enjoyed a similar redemption story with its podium after Anderson was dropped into the team on Saturday morning due to an injury for regular driver Jutta Kleinschmidt during practice. And I don't know if that clip is out there, but she went over a jump really hard and the nose of that car just hit the ground it was violent. The force you could tell. So she got injured, which meant that Anderson took her place in the car. The entire weekend was just chaotic. Andretti United had a very strong Saturday and carried that into the semifinals, where Katie Munnings made an excellent start, but obscured visibility on the freshly wet track dropped the team back. She had mud splash on her windshield, and it was very difficult for her to find where the button was for the windshield wipers, so she lost valuable time and, I believe, a possible track position. I mean, I think she was running in third, but like overtaking, or maybe she was second. I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at it, but it was devastating for the team. And Timmy Hansen mounted a comeback charge, but ultimately finished 0.3 seconds off of advancing. The second semifinal was crazy as well. I definitely suggest you go find that video. And the crazy race, which is the last chance qualifier where only one team, the winner, can move on, McLaren recovered from a heavy collision with JBXE to win that race and advance to the final. The combination of RXR's absence from the final, Acciona Sainz and Ganassi's final results, and McLaren taking 5 points away from the championship protagonist by going fastest in the Continental Traction Challenge sector of the course during the weekend, means that the championship was not decided this weekend, and we get to see how it all plays out in the final race of the season in Uruguay, and that takes place, I believe, near Thanksgiving. I mean, it's November 26th and 27th. That's it for your show this week. Thank you so much for listening. If you did like it, go ahead and share it with your friends or share it on social media. Let other people have the opportunity to listen as well. If you are curious and just starting with me here and want to listen to any of the previous podcast episodes, you can find them on the webpage under the podcast section and on pretty much all of the best podcast platforms and maybe a few of the not so best ones as well. If you want more EV resource content, I encourage you to subscribe to the YouTube channel as well as sign up for the monthly magazine. You can find the latter on the website as well. If you enjoy the podcast and feel like I've earned your support, you can head over to patreon.com/EV resource. Patreon is a website that allows audience members like yourselves or just groups of people to support their favorite creators. On our EV resource Patreon page, the tiers for support start at $5 or $10, but you can always choose a custom amount. I mean, $5,000 is perfectly acceptable. That would be actually quite extreme. Certainly appreciated, but definitely extreme. I want to thank Rajiv Narayan and Christopher Lawrence for leading the pack at the executive producer level, and to Charles Hall and Eric Weber at the producer level. And I do have to apologize to Christopher. Apparently, the last couple of episodes, I've been saying Chris Hall, making an utter debauchery of both Chris and Charles' names. I invite your feedback, especially when I mess up. You can email me at hello@ev-resource.com, although don't just send me a bunch of hate mail. You can find EV Resource on social media like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. And that is all for this podcast. So thank you so much for being with me, and I'll catch you next week.